Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. I apologize for the little bit of a delay there. Hopefully somebody's out there listening can tell me if video's coming up. I think it is. Hopefully we got this all figured out. We have Gary with us here tonight, who's been with us in the past as well. Anytime we bring a third person in, it's kind of a scramble to see if I can figure it out or not, and we managed to get it to work. So once again, I apologize for the delay. But tonight, we will be chatting about ice fishing, I believe is what we're talking about tonight.
Yep, and it is working. There is volume. I don't know if me and Gary have volume yet, but it is working. I just checked it.
It should all be good for everybody there. I think I got her all hammered out here, but let's assume it works.
Your volume definitely is working, Ben, because it just came up on the TV here. So,
okay, awesome. At least we know it's working.
Yeah, and I can hear Gary there now, too. So, okay, we're all good to go. We're a few minutes late, but I mean, that's pretty much true Atlantic Bushcraft tradition now. Fake it till you make it. But, yeah, so where would you gentlemen like to start on ice fishing? Gary being our resident expert, both Ben and myself, we have experience ice fishing, but not much luck ice fishing. I think I've done smelts and things like that, don't get me wrong, and the odd rainbow trout, but I mean, I don't have vast experience in it.
No, I've tried a ton.
There's really only so many opportunities in Nova Scotia, so, you know, smelt and rainbows make up, you know, probably close to 50% of the fishing. Some of the other species are becoming more popular now. I'm one that I would rather go to and hike into a lake than go to the local stock lake for rainbows. I mean, I got one 5 minutes from home, so I do fish there on occasion. Mm-hmm. But I like going into the backcountry, and it's an excuse quite often to do winter camping, too, for me. So
I'm not ignoring you there, gentlemen. I'm just trying to get my laptop up and running as well. Okay. So
perfect. Yeah, it is a great excuse to get your hot tent out and get out and try some new spots. And that's what I'm really hoping to get at least one or two opportunities this year. Got the sled going downstairs, and I'm starting to load up the gear and see how I want to get it arranged. So,
yeah, I was able to get everything into my small sled and an auger and a hot tent and the stove and all that and get back just a kilometer or two back into some lakes that are legal to fish year round, but not necessarily accessible for most people.
And you did say a key word there, Gary, that I was going to bring up later, but seeing you mentioned it now, there are only certain bodies of water where you are allowed to fish year round. You'd be a little bit more inept with that. Where would somebody go to find information like that?
You can do a search on the Nova Scotia, like on Google, just for Nova Scotia winter fishery. They put out a list every year. It generally doesn't change too much, but I've seen some stuff online that there has been a change in the last year or so. For one lake that was open is no longer open, and I know there's a few people on one of the Nova Scotia fishing sites talking about going there for a trip, and people were pretty quick to jump on that it is closed now for ice fishing. So
okay, that's fair. Now, would you find that in the fishing regulations handbook? Is that information available? I'm going to be honest, never read the thing start to back.
It quite often will have some seasons in it. Like if you look under, like I think I'm in recreational fisheries area 5. I take part in the, there's a committee. They go around the province once a year, the Fishery Advisory Council, and anyone can go. And I just signed up for it 1 year and went. And I went in, I think it was the fall meeting, so it was like October, November. And I said, you know what? There's these two lakes. They have pickerel, perch, white perch and yellow perch. There's no trout. They generally will not open lakes with too much wild trout in them because they can be really, especially small bodies of water, can just be abused. Mm. You don't have to look too far in Ontario to lakes that were accessible via snowmobile that had brook trout in them. got hit pretty hard. But I asked, I just showed my first meeting. I went, why can't we fish these two lakes? And I got an email a month later. It was around Christmas, and they opened them up for the winter fishery. So some lakes, they're listed in that book now, but some lakes will change between the time the book comes out and the following January.
So the website's the best place to check.
Absolutely, for your up-to-date, yeah.
And do you have that website there, Robert?
No, sorry, I don't. Can you give that to me again one more time? You just Google search it, was it?
No, if you Google search Nova Scotia winter fishery, I'm just going to bring...
I send him the link.
Okay.
Let's see. Winter sport fishing is here. I think this is the same one you probably got me there, Ben, where I'm running between two computers. I'm going to be honest, not going to be as quick as I normally am, because I'm batting stuff from the laptop over here to try and transfer over to the desktop over here. But I think we're good.
Yeah, we'll just put it in the description for this when we fully publish it anyway. So if anyone wants to come back and look at the description, they'll find it in there.
Well, you guys are kind of crammed together there, but you get the idea. Here's the website here. So you just go onto this website, go down through it. There's some more information with sport fishing down there, and it gives you rainbow brook trout tag limits and some locations there, just as Gary was saying. So if anybody's looking for that, that's NovaScotia.ca/fish/sportfishing/winter fishing. And that's for our local ones here in Nova Scotia. For your own area, do much the same. I would say just Google your area winter fishery.
Yeah, I think that'll help most people find it. But, you know, it is a great bit of fun. There are a few things I think that we need to get. People are probably most wondering about, what do you need to ice fish? Like, what equipment is the minimum that you would need?
Well, you're going to need some way to get through the ice. So an auger is handy. I mean, you can do it with an axe. I've seen people do it with power saws. But a little auger goes along, especially if you're going to go anywhere. If you're like me and want to go to one of the lakes that's not plowed in the winter and you've got a kilometer or two hike, you do not want to be carrying extra weight, especially if you're going like with you got a hot tent and hot tent stove and all the other gear to be safe overnight. Yeah. Light auger is a must, and a fish, not necessarily a fishing rod, but I guess a fishing line at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can do it with a fishing line and a piece of cardboard or a piece of wood that you can wrap the line around, as long as you got something to hold on to.
And there's tip ups you can buy at, you know, Walmart, Canadian Tire and stuff like that. They're not as utilized in Nova Scotia as they are in other provinces, for the simple fact that you can only fish one line at a time. If you were in a different province, you might be able to have four or five tip ups and a regular jigging rod. You just can't do that in Nova Scotia. So, if you're going to fish with a tip up, you're basically putting something under the ice and leaving it sit there and hoping something comes along and takes it.
Now, I did mention smelt fishing, and I'm going to clear this right off of there. Do you, once upon a time, and it's been years since I've gone smelting, you used to be able to spear smelt. I don't think you're allowed to do that anymore. Are you still allowed to spear smelt? Do you know?
I haven't heard of it, and I certainly haven't seen it in the regs, but the regulations cover, for the most part, cover freshwater non-tidal. So if you're in tidal waters, that's a different kettle of fish and falls under federal, and I really haven't done it. I can remember fishing smelts in the Annapolis River in the basin out in Annapolis Royal, which was tidal, falls under tidal. Like, you can go mackerel fishing there in the summer or whatever. But I don't remember seeing anyone spear fishing them then. But certainly the regulations wouldn't even show up in the Nova Scotia sport fishing book. Occasionally they'll mention stuff like that, but it does fall under federal if it's tidal.
And that's fair. And I guess if you ever have any questions about any of this information, contact your local natural resources, or I guess it's natural resources and renewables or something now. But anyway, contact DNR, and somebody there will definitely be able to get a hold, give you some answers, or the conservation officers, which I think are now under Department of Environment. They no longer fall under natural resources. They're environment, I believe. And trust me, they'll definitely know the regulations, because they're going to be the ones that are going to give you any grief if there's a problem.
Well, there's two sets. You have your conservation officers and you have your DFO.
Yeah.
So I've run into both, depending on where I've been fishing in that. Sometimes I run into the DFO more than I do with the COs. So if you're fishing tidal, yeah. But they would be able to get you in contact. I've met many of them on both sides, and they're all pretty good individuals. So, and they're the help. They want people to get out and have fun. So they're usually pretty knowledgeable on the areas that they specialize in.
Now, just because I know you sent me some links there, Ben, you were speaking about augers. Do you guys want to go a little bit more into that so we can, I know you sent me a couple examples there, Ben, and I had an example too of one that I had just recently seen, in a video, and apparently one of my buddies just picked one up. I think you've talked to him before. No, maybe he hasn't been on the show, but I've talked about him before. David, a buddy of mine, he does a lot of outdoor sea stuff. He just actually got one of these K-drill ice augers. Have you ever heard of one of those? Hooks up to an impact driver.
There's even a lot of the regular ones you can switch over to that.
So, what do you look for in a good ice auger? Before we show some of the ones we got, what's something you are looking for in a decent ice auger for around here? Because I know, like, the area I was originally from was Miramichi. We could get a lot of different types of ice down in the harbor there, which normally where we smelt fished. And this is tidal waters. I'm going to draw a lot of my experience back from that. But I do know, like, some of the ice augers we'd have, especially if you got, like, cake ice or pack ice, where it's, like, different densities at different thicknesses, that would really screw up a lot of the manual augers. Mainly because the guys probably didn't take the best care of them, and it's salt water, and salt water corrodes metal, and they probably didn't clean them. So there's a lot of factors running in there, but what do you look for in a good auger? Because before you can fish, you got to get into the water.
Yeah. Well, I've had one auger for the last 20 years, so I've fished with other guys with different ones. Mine's just a 6-inch manual auger, which I think is plenty for Nova Scotia. It's been years since I've seen more than 12 inches of ice, but I have been out in previous years where I've been in 24 to 28. That's not near as fun, but it's doable with that auger. But in the ice that we've been getting in the last 5 years, I'll go out and drill a dozen holes before I even start fishing. I think it's plenty for getting the fish. Maybe the Brador Lakes has some real big rainbows that people are catching. But there's not many fish that you're going to catch ice fishing that you can't get through a 6-inch hole in Nova Scotia. I've seen the little pack ones. One of my buddies carry one of them that's only 4 inches. That's getting a little tight if you get a good fish on. And then when I go into New Brunswick, the buddy that I go with there has, you know, one of the power augers but you're talking big ice when you start getting up in northern New Brunswick. So
now when you're mentioning the size of these, like 6-inch, 8-inch, that's the diameter of the auger itself, not the length, right?
Yeah. I know Ben sent, well, I think is the first one he sent with, the first thing I noticed was 8 inches. I don't want to take that too far back in the woods. It's going to be heavier. And it's going to take more effort to get through the ice. So I find 6 inches sort of a happy medium. I also wouldn't want to pay that price, really. But I think mine was $79 to $100.
And this one here, this is, I think, I was kind of quickly reading it while you were chatting there. This is one that hooks up to a power drill, is it, Ben?
Yes, the two I sent earlier today both hook up to a power drill. And I just sent them because I thought that the concept was neat. And I went out last year with the guy, Ryan, and he had one that hooked up to your drill. And he drilled probably 30 holes that day in a single battery.
So these things go through pretty quick then, because once again, my experience for putting holes in, used an axe.
Yeah. I've done that
with my 6-inch manual one with your normal lights in Nova Scotia. I don't know, maybe 30 seconds, a whole 30 seconds to a minute. After maybe I've done 4 or 5 in a row, I start getting winded. Now, often when I'm using that, I've also hiked into a spot, spent all day getting the hot tent set up, and then I get all my wood done so that I know I'll be warm. I can make a fire quickly when I get back. So I don't get out fishing until like 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, I'm usually pretty tired by then anyway, but you can, there's really not, is if you're a bushcrafter, you know how to sharpen a knife. So sharpen your blades every once in a while. Yeah.
And that's fair. Oh,
yeah. You know, I thought the drill concept was pretty cool, but honestly, like if you're out in really cold weather, batteries don't generally do great, so you have to try and keep them warm. And a manual auger isn't really all that much work, especially like a 6 or a 4 inch. Because a 4 inch would probably work okay here too, wouldn't it?
I've seen situations because, say, chain pickerel can get so long and they can fill out that they can be a little bit of a handle to try to get up through a 4 inch hole. 6 inch, that's why I say 6 inch is a pretty happy medium.
Yeah.
It's not as heavy as an 8-inch. It takes a little less effort than an 8-inch to get down through the ice. And you can get every... I've never lost a fish because of the size of the hole.
Hmm. So if you guys are good on that subject, we've gotten in through the ice. Let's talk rods a little bit. Because you used a couple keywords there, some jargon, some tip-ups. I know when, once again, guilty, smelt fishing... or spearing, and then towards the end of it, when I think they said you couldn't spear anymore, you had to use like red string or something like that. Once again, real shady on the subject because it's been so long, but we just use standard fishing rods, and I know that's not the best option for when you're ice fishing.
No, you're just so far away from the hole. And some of the bites are so subtle that you want a short rod. If you go to Walmart or Canadian Tire, they're starting to get some better ones. But generally speaking, you get these meat sticks that you're not going to feel anything on anyway. We're not talking huge fish in Nova Scotia. So you really want something light. And even if I might have ultralight rods that I'll put a little piece of wire, do a little like a sensitivity bell on the end. Because sometimes the bites are extremely light.
Okay. Now, another question I was going to ask you, and I'm going to riddle you with questions here. I've seen people take their normal rod, take usually like a 3-section rod, take the middle section out and try and short it down that way. Is that a viable option? Because it doesn't quite fit. It's kind of like rednecking stuff together, which I'm all about. Don't get me wrong.
I'm not absolutely arguing these. Well, I mean, if your line's in the water, you're fishing. So if you take a stick, you know, when I was a kid, we used to fish the local brooks with an alder. It'd be no different than ice fishing, and it depends. If people are watching from Nova Scotia, 99% of the ice fishing is done on rainbow lakes that are stocked. Not necessarily, it's going to change if you want to go catch wild fish. And most of the time that means your perch, your pickerel, yellow and white perch and pickerel. Occasionally, and there's quite a few people that still do smelts. It's been years for me, but that's still fairly popular. I know people have been doing it already this year, so.
And that's fair. And like you said, the only time that I've gone rainbow fishing or fishing anything other than smelts, it was a stock pond. And yeah, literally that's the
extent. And that doesn't make it easy.
Right? No, I didn't have any
rainbow
luck.
rainbow fishing through the ice. I worked on a fish farm when I went up through university. Actually, we had a fish in the pond at Upper Clemens Park, and had people come in and fish it. The rainbows catch on pretty quick. So you're more likely to have great luck on opening day than you are at some place else. And people tend to use the same thing Yeah. Oh, I caught him on shrimp. Well, great. But you now have 200 people on the ice fishing with a piece of shrimp on the end of the line. And most people use too big of equipment for Nova Scotia. Rainbows will not tolerate once they might be dumb for opening day, but they catch on pretty quickly to the line size.
Now that being said, what weight of line are you going to use in Nova Scotia? You already said the fish we get here aren't that big, and I once again I know some of the people I used to go out with, they used to go crazy. They were like running 20-pound test on an ice rod, which to me seems like overkill. Now, what
Yep.
about you?
I don't go any heavier than 4 pound, so I'm way the opposite way.
4 pounds. Okay.
2 4-pound, even for pickerel, I'll take the chance that I'll get bit off. I occasionally will put on a piece of 20 pound on the end for a bite tippet if I've been bit off 2 or 3 times for pickerel, because if you went to Canadian Tire or Walmart and bought the cheapest 20 pound test you could find, and the cheaper the better in this case, pickerel won't bite through it very often. So I do it the same thing in open water. I tie a piece of 20 pound test on the end, but most of the time I'm trying to get bites. So you're not going to go and catch a boatload of fish. You might only get 4 or 5 bites, and you want to maximize those bites. So I go small.
So, tell me if the science behind this is right. The reason you're getting fewer bites, simply because the colder weather, the fish aren't as active and they're not really looking to feed as much. Their metabolism slows down. They don't need to feed as often. This is what I've been told. Can you clarify?
Some. Anyone that knows how to use a flasher, and I'm not good at it, but I've fished with some people that are great at it, that if they can find a school of perch, they're going to catch a ton of fish, like maybe 100 or more from one spot. And some of those lakes that those fish come from might even be inside HRM that, everyone's out fishing rainbows on. So fish still feed in them. Sometimes they feed pretty heavy under the ice, so I don't necessarily agree with that. Certainly some do. If you're fishing a lake that smallmouth bass are there, but it's open for perch or pickerel, you'll very rarely see a smallmouth. But they'll be hunkered down, and if you happen to get on top of them, you can still even catch a few of them.
So they're an opportunity. Like if they see food, they're not turning it
It
down.
has to be, they're not going to chase.
Yeah.
Pickerel might on occasion, but they'll only chase a very short distance. Fish will school up, and particularly perch, trout. Trout will usually be on the move all the time. A few years ago, I bought a cheap underwater camera. It was before they became popular. And 3 of us took them out on the local lake that has rainbows in it, just 10 minutes here from home. And we were like 3 guys that were in a candy store or something, or watching the Super Bowl with their favorite teams in it. We sat there and watched that camera all day long. I think we could land it 3 fish, but there wasn't a minute that we did not have rainbows, multiple rainbows swimming around our baits.
Really?
We had too heavy a line when we went. I mean, I'm talking like using 1/64th of an ounce jig head. It's just tiny as tiny can be. We'd pick up the odd fish. Even had goldfish on screen. So there's obviously goldfish in the local lake too. So, and I have caught them through the ice. So.
Okay, so seeing we're kind of going down that path without tipping your hand, giving away any of your secrets, what is a basic ice fishing setup? Pass the rod. How would you gear up to go, say, for a weekend warrior like myself? I don't want to spend a ton of money, but I want to go out and have a little fun.
Well, most people will go out, just have a hook, maybe a weight, and they'll either have shrimp or they'll have power bait, which is almost like a Play-Doh thing. and they'll catch their they'll catch fish, sometimes better than others. I go tinier than that, generally, except for maybe opening day, and I generally will use some sort of lure, a spoon or a wrap. There's ice Rapalas that are only, you can buy them at Canadian Tire for like $10, and I'll go with the smallest ones generally. Little spoons, I got little Williams Wobblers there, which is quite famous in Canada. Just a little spoon, and I might tip that with shrimp or power bait, but it gives some flash and moves around. Even the minnow lures, and I happen to have one right there that I like, and it's a little perch. But on that belly hook, I'll almost always put on something, whether it be a little piece of just something for scent. A lot of the companies now, they're making soft plastics fish heads with little lines coming off them for the guts, because it's quite popular in Canada to rip the head off a minnow with a little bit of guts trailing, and they put that on their center hook, on their belly hooks, on their lures to bring in fish. So,
So the idea behind that's not only adding smells, it adding movement, or
it would, but if you're using the lure, you already got the movement down. So I fish lures more than most people do, just because I try to be different. Especially in rainbow lakes, you've got hundreds of people pounding them with the same thing and wondering why no one's getting any fish. Oh, well, they're not biting today. Well, that's because everyone in the lake is using the same thing. They get used to it. They're not dumb. They catch on pretty quick, so.
So, I know you have a nice fishing story, Ben. A very successful one, if I if I can jab a little fun at you here. How did you find your outing, Ben?
I have said it before. To me, catching fish through ice is pure magic. It never works out successful. I have lost more things in the hole than I've ever pulled out of
I think you
it.
had a hit the day you were out with me. I think we each got hit once, but
Yep.
it just didn't work out for us.
Yeah, I didn't pull anything out.
When, just if you think about it though, we went out in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
And you got people have to apply their ice fishing to when they go fishing any other time. I've gone out and thrown out, did the whole hot tent thing and get out on the ice at 3 o'clock, nothing. And then half hour before dark, all of a sudden I catch five in like 10 minutes. Same thing with early mornings.
Yeah.
Nine times out of 10, they react the same in the winter as they do in the summer.
So much like hunting, then your most active times are going to be first thing in the morning and right before dark.
Yep, absolutely.
See, that's
And
all
Ben and
good stuff
I's
to know.
adventure just happened to be in the afternoon one day.
Yeah. And I'm going to try that. This year, I think I'm definitely going to try and get out if I can get out. Probably in early in the morning and do a bit
If I'm
or
going rainbow fishing, I'm going to be there before sun up. And I'll be gone before most people show up for the day.
See, and that's for see, I wouldn't have known that. I would have assumed it would be like late morning would be your best time or early evening, maybe an hour before dusk and an hour after sunrise kind of dealio.
See, and I had always assumed with the ice being over the top that they wouldn't tell much of a difference. Like it's pretty dark down there all day, all night, but I'm sure that enough light does go through the ice that they can tell that it is day and night and that
There's
quite a
some
bit.
old guys that seem to know what they're doing. That
Yeah.
doesn't matter if it's summer or ice fishing. They're fishing freshwater, sometimes 100 kilometers from, nowhere near salt or tidal. And they still pay attention to tides. No
Okay.
matter where they are, they pay attention to the tides. There's a lot of tournament anglers that fish bass that pay attention to the tide times. And they're not fishing tidal water, or the lakes they're fishing might not even be attached, directly. So
So is there thinking behind this? Because the tides go with the moon. Is it something to do with the phase of the moon that may get the fish going?
I suspect. I haven't really looked into it that closely, but I did remember hearing one old fella say, the fishing's not going to, it was in a tournament, and it starts at 7 a.m., it's over at 3. And I can remember him saying that, they're not really going to start biting until 10 after 2 today. Well, he was freaking right. And he was talking about tides and stuff, and man, they turned on, and it happened to be in the middle of the afternoon on a hot day. So,
yeah.
And I mean, there is quite a bit of science to when to fish and all of that stuff. And you learn it as you go, I guess. And much like what you just said there, you learn by getting the information passed along by somebody else. I mean, I don't pretend to be a good fisherman with anything. Ben can attest to this. I can drown worms with the best of them. Or pepperettes, whatever happens to be on the go. But, I mean, the little bit of knowledge that I have about fishing is generally handed down to me. What's that?
Don't knock the pepperettes.
Hey, it worked, man. You pulled tons of fish out of there. We got a meal out of it. You made me a believer. But, most of that information is passed down. And I guess the best way to get that information is just to go out and ask questions. Now, there's going to be some people, they're a little private. They don't like that. But for the most part, I found, what was big in my area, once again, I'm going to pull from Miramichi. There's anybody that's been from that area knows that area. There's a bridge there, two of them actually, and first day of fishing season, they're packed. Like, people come from all over to fish these places, and you'll get a good round number of people. Generally, first day, there's still ice in these waters too, so it's not really ice fishing, but you're going for brown trout. And it's kind of interesting. You'll get these two sets of people. And there's not a lot in between, unfortunately, for that area anyway. There's, the people that just want nothing to do with anybody else. They're there. They're in their own world. They tend to put on, 20, 40-pound test, cast over everybody's lines, reel them all in, cut everything off, and keep the gear. Which, to me, are, they're kind of idiots. You know what I mean? But then there's this other group of people. They're just there to have a good time, catch some fish. They want to chat, make a little fire, have a cook, a boil up, something like that. And those are the kind of people to look for around riverbanks and things like that, because you can kind of scooch in, know them a little bit, and you'll find out a ton of information. In my experience, what's your thoughts, Gary?
You can learn a lot just by watching. If you see someone else on the river, that they might be a few hundred yards ahead of you. If you see someone else on the ice, I've told my kids and people that I take fishing with me that are so-called novices or whatever. There's something to be learned from every fisherman. If you see somebody out fishing, chances are they've caught fish at some point. Yeah. And there's something to be taken from everyone. It might be spots. You might be on a new river and you see, maybe it's just footprints, that this is a hole that has heavy traffic. If you're out on the ice, there'll be spots that are littered with holes and others, large parts of the lake that are virtually untouched. It's probably a reason for it. That doesn't eliminate me from trying new things, because I try to be different than the masses, but there's always stuff to take from everybody that's out there fishing.
And funny enough, to that point, I tie flies a little bit, I dabble, and I fly fish a little bit, I dabble. I learned both things from a blind guy, 100% blind, no vision whatsoever. He taught me to tie flies and he taught me how to cast a fly rod, which most people would think I was crazy for saying, but I mean, this fella was actually pretty good at it. And he taught me simply by telling me and just listening. So don't think somebody doesn't have useful information, I guess is the point behind that, because you'll find the damnedest things from the weirdest people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
Let's be frank. I mean, as far as ice fishing goes, it's getting out. We can sit at home, do nothing, or we can get our butts out there. And, maybe if the wind's howling, it's not that great. If you don't have a hut, I tend not to fish with a hut, especially now that my hut sort of went down the crapper on a trip with Ben a few years ago. It's nice out there most of the time. It could be negative 10. you're dressed properly, you're fine.
Yeah,
and you'll enjoy the day out there.
I think that's the next big point we should probably talk on. It is really important to dress properly because you are potentially out in the open. And if there is wind, there's not really a lot of protection from the wind when you're out there. So do take some heavier clothing. Do take some stuff that'll keep the wind off you. And
like layers. It's just like any other time. Layers.
Layers.
You get out there, you see guys go out there and they drill a couple holes and they're all bungled up. And the next thing you know, they're cold. Well, that's because they started sweating, drilling the holes, and then they only stay for a few minutes because they get cold real quick. So I wear less clothes going in than once I get there.
Yeah.
I have these negative 100 boots. Boots are probably the main thing.
I was just going to say, the number one thing I know about being on the ice, good boots. Rubber boots are not good boots.
Yeah. I bought these negative 100 ones from Merrick Work Warehouse, and they're called negative 100. I don't know if they still sell them. They're big. They're heavy. I will not hike in anywhere with them. I can't even put my snowshoes on with them, but I'll take them with me. And once I'm done camp, getting camp ready, I'll switch over to them before I walk on the ice. Because once you're standing around, it doesn't take very long standing on ice before your feet can get cold.
I actually picked up a set of, they're a rubber boot, but they're lined, but they're minus 100 from Cabela's. They're over Boxing Day, and they're on sale, and I got a good price on them, I think. But, man, are they ever warm. I've been out shoveling the driveway and stuff, and you tell the difference.
Yeah, I wouldn't even do that with mine.
And much like Ben, I finally broke down and picked up a good set of winter boots this year. I just couldn't do it no more. I was the guilty guy with the rubber boots. I can't remember what they're actually called. They're like neoprene. They're not really rubber. All I can think is, do you remember when the ladies really used to be into Uggs? Not Uggs. There's some sort, maybe it was Uggs, some sort of neoprene boot. It looks like a rubber boot, but it's kind of neoprene. And that's kind of what mine are. And they were
the
good.
Muck boots.
They're what?
Muck boots.
Yeah, kind of deal. And as long as you're moving, great. The second you stop, they're terrible. And that's what I wore for winter boots for probably the last 7-8 years.
And 90% of the time, that's fine. Because most people go out and they shovel the driveway, or they're walking to their vehicle, or they're going for a little hike or whatever. But if you're standing around, not so good.
And that's kind of what the problem was. I was really starting to feel it when I was doing the snow blowing and stuff. Because you're not moving fast, you're not really working hard. And that's where I really started to notice it. And towards the end of hunting season. Because we get snow and cold days during the end of hunting season because it runs into December. And I was really starting to get cold during there. And I learned the importance of a really good set of boots. And I can remember from when I did ice fish and I lived in Miramichi. That was usually the first part of me to get cold. I had good winter boots then. But just a couple hours of just standing on the ice. Like the cold will eventually, if you're not moving, getting the blood circulating, things like that. If you don't have good footwear, it's real easy to get cold, and it's real easy to kind of forget about how cold you are because it'll only be your feet or something like that. Some people, it really bothers them. Some people, they kind of ignore it to the point where it could become a problem. You start stumbling around, you get clumsy and things like that, which is not a safe thing to do around any kind of iced water. Because you kind of want your dexterity, especially if it's a warmer day. Always a danger day there. If you get a little bit of water on top, one, you shouldn't be on the ice because it's unpredictable. But, I mean, nobody's going to listen to that information, but it gets slippery, and now you got that extra, much like solder and thermal paste, it makes that solid layer around your boots, which can leach away heat and stuff like that even more. All things people don't tend to think about, they just throw on, oh yeah, those are the winter boots I've always worn, and out they go, and then they get out there, and they get uncomfortable. As Gary said, they get cold, they have an unpleasant time, they don't want to do it again.
Usually, though, well, in my experience, if you can, like, I've always been a huge fan of fishing, but friends trying to convince me to go ice fishing for the first time, I thought they were nuts. But most people, including myself, once you got out there, that it only took me once, and I go, you know what, this is a lot of fun. There's other things I like to do in the winter too, like rabbit hunt or snare or get the dog in the woods. If I can do, there's times that I can do, you know, all three, camp, snare, and ice fish on one trip. So I can sort of kill two or three birds with one stone there. But I was surprised at how fun it was, because it doesn't sound fun to most people. But in the end, you can have a pretty good time out there. And certainly if you can go with a couple friends, makes it even better. So.
Yeah, it definitely does. So what have we covered so far? You need something to make a hole. You need clothes to stay comfortable. And I think that's the important thing there. Comfortable, not too hot, not too cold. I mean, if you can stay comfortable, you're going to be able to stay there longer and enjoy it. Time of day really has an effect. Lighter line tends to be better, we're saying right now. So I'm going to try that. I have been using heavier line, so I'm going to try it. I'm going to cut the weight of my line down quite a bit. An experiment. It sounds like just trying different things. Like, don't get trapped into the same thing everyone else is doing. If you want different results, you have to try something different.
If you're going out there and you're going to spend the day, I mean, most people watching this podcast are here because they bushcraft. Well, what a great opportunity to take a stove out with you. If you're just going to set it, you know, you put a piece of shrimp on, and if you're going to be there all day, there's going to be times when that rod's just sitting in the hole and you're waiting on a fish. Cook. I mean, I quite often, I'll dehydrate meals. And I think one of my videos that I did a couple years ago, I was testing out jambalaya recipes. I dehydrated it. Well, I wanted to test it then, so I took it out on the ice with me, and I did it out on the ice while I was fishing there in the middle of the afternoon. You know, some of my buddies, they'll do, you know, some deer meat out there or something, or stuff like that. You can have quite a time out there, really, if you do a little planning to go ahead. I love having like a coffee and, you know, some snacks out there. If I'm just going for early morning, well, that might be different. But if I'm going to spend some time there, I'm going to do some other things besides just jigging a rod.
And seeing you mentioned YouTube videos there, prime time. Why don't you tell everybody what your YouTube channel is and where they can, how they get to it?
Well, my channel's NS Yak Fisher Outdoors. Hasn't really had a whole lot of content lately because I've been spending a lot of time working on with a group in New Brunswick on a TV show. So that has taken a ton of time, and looks like it probably will again this summer. But on the same lines as I've just recently paired up with Old Town Canoes and Kayaks. They want the bushcraft outback content along with tournament fishing. I do a lot of tournament fishing, but I think they grab me because of my experience on both ends. So hopefully that's just gives me an extra excuse to actually get out and do some more bushcrafty and backcountry stuff this year. So, got a couple of new boats on the way. So,
new boats.
Hopefully this.
I can see it.
Unfortunately, I didn't realize this was going to happen for me. So I switched kayaks in September, got that beautiful PDL kayak out three times. And now that's going to be replaced. And I also have a solo canoe coming that I'm quite excited to show off when it gets here. So probably won't be much until spring, but hopefully I'll be back at it on the YouTube videos by then.
And I'm sure there's enough content there for anybody that's new to your channel and just finding you from here. Go on over, check out all the content that's there, especially if you're into fishing, obviously. Yeah. And some bushcrafting, some boating. There's a lot of stuff over there. I've checked out your channel, a lot of good stuff. And yeah, there's plenty there to keep a person interested until you get some fresh content up, that's for sure.
I certainly think there's a couple of the hot tent ice fishing trips that I have on there. So certainly with tonight's topic, you could find a couple of them on there.
I was going to say, you might even figure out where the old fishing shack went by watching some of your videos there.
Yeah, that's it. That was a nice night.
So I have a question. Is it worth trying to get out to a lake in the summer to get a feel for it for in the winter where you want to fish. To get a bit of an idea.
Absolutely. I mentioned that I tournament fish. Well, I tournament fish in New Brunswick, and we're talking quite a bit bigger water, generally speaking, than here, because you're St. John River and tributary. It's huge. I mean, I'm dealing with boats that are, and sometimes houseboats. And I don't often use a fish finder. You can learn a lot by the lay of the land, and you can sort of tell it's not as easy to do in winter. So if you're out there and you're looking at the lay of the land, you can see the bottom in areas. You can see where it's gravel or maybe silty. You can give yourself a pretty good idea of spots to check out ice fishing. And sometimes it will be the same spots. If you catch a trout in the summer, in the heat of the summer, chances are there's going to be fish in that location in the winter too.
I assume that the deeper spots in the winter are probably spots to really look out for, because the water will probably be not as
depends. It depends. Chain pickerel, you can start catching them. I've caught them in under a foot of water. I would say 8 feet probably is the sweet spot for them in Nova Scotia. Trout, speckled trout will cruise shorelines in the winter. One rule of thumb, you could be out in 15 feet of water. If you're not getting anything, but you're certain there's fish in the area, fish right under the ice. Rainbows will cruise, rainbows and speckles will cruise right under the ice, or they'll be on bottom or in between, but it's usually somewhere close to bottom or just under the ice. So they don't need very much water for that. You know, as long as there's enough water to move through. Now, if it's not working for you, switch, move. Go in shallower, go out a little deeper. Your perch, you're going to find, yep, yellow and white perch are going to be, chances are, look for the deepest spot in the lake.
Okay.
But everything else that we fish for, I'm not looking for the deepest spot.
That's good information.
It is. Are you taking notes there, Robert?
I kind of actually am. I'm definitely going to go back through this and listen to it again and pick out some key features. We are coming up on the hour there, and I did want to do one segment here, if you would indulge us, Gary. What is some tips and tricks, just general stuff, you can offer out to new fishermen in general, but more towards ice fishermen, that you think most people should know going out? And I'm putting you on the spot. I know you haven't rehearsed this, but is there anything that really kind of pops out that's like, man, I wish I had known this X amount of time ago?
Just to get out there. But I think the time of day. Yeah, it's a Saturday morning. It's your weekend off. You may not want to get up super early in the morning. But if you want to increase your chances of success, get there early, or stay late, one or the other, or both. A lot of people are showing up 10 or 11 o'clock and fishing until 1 or 2 or 3, and they don't know why they're not having success. Well, it might work. You can have an overcast day, that can really throw things off, and just like in open water, fish could be biting in the middle of the day. But if you had to pick a time, if you want your best chance of success, you want to go early or late. And hopefully that will hook you on getting out more. And if you go there and you spend it, you know, 8 hours through the middle of the day or something and don't get a bite, it's not a lot of incentive for someone to go back and try it again. So,
yeah.
Are you taking notes, Ben?
Well, I can tell you, when Gary came to visit me in my cabin, there was 2 or 3 mornings before I got out of bed, there was a text on my phone of him catching a pretty big fish. And I'm like, damn, I didn't even think they were out there.
Yeah, we caught them a little later in the day then, too.
Oh, we definitely did. But, yeah, no, I mean, it definitely makes a difference when you do, you know, just around sunrise and just around sunset. The fishing does always seem to be better. I've noticed that myself. And then weather, to me, has often had an effect. So keeping that in mind too, right?
My experience at Ben's Lake was Mornings were 10 times as good as the evenings, at least the evenings that we were out there.
Yeah.
We barely caught a fish in the evening. So,
you mentioned weather there, Ben. Interesting point. How do you mean weather can affect fishing?
Go ahead. I want to say something, then I want Gary, because Gary's going to probably have a better answer. But I've noticed that before and after rain has often been fairly good for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, rains, people have been saying that for years, right? If you want to get real technical about it, you can start looking at the barometric pressures and stuff like that. But, I mean, it obviously affects fish. It will still affect fish under the ice. Right before a snowstorm, definitely they'll strap on the feed bags. They get that same feeling as a big storm coming in the summer.
Okay, and that's fair. I mean, this is all good information for people that are new to fishing. You know what I mean? Like, I can say I've been fishing since I've been a kid, but I'm a crab fisherman. I mean, it's no secret. But I take all this stuff in, and I'm sure there's other people out there that fit the same bill. You know what I mean? So this is all good information to know. So before or after a rain. So when the barometric pressure drops, I assume is what you're saying, Gary. As it drops, they tend to feed more?
I haven't got that much in depth with it. I know some people pay attention to the barometric pressure big time. To me, it's a feeling. I drive my wife crazy, but like, especially in May, there'll be a point where I'm going, oh, well, I'm going brown trout fishing tonight. I just get that feeling for when it's best for them. I find myself really in tune. I really love brown trout fishing. I probably like it better than anything else as far as fishing goes. But I'll just get a feeling this is the time, and it's usually, you know, the front's coming in or whatever, but I get a feeling in the air, and some people pay really attention to that.
It's all from experience. So the key is to get out there at different times, different environments, different weathers, get a feel for what works and learn from your own experience.
Yeah. I mean, we got some snow in Nova Scotia now. The put and take fisheries, which is what the rainbow fishery is by and large in Nova Scotia, is fine. You might get yourself a couple stock rainbows. They're tend to be on the small side. You can occasionally you'll get one that makes it through a year or something like that. But I'd encourage people to take a look at those list of lakes, find one that you have to snowshoe into. Some of them aren't that far. You don't have to get far off the beaten path. Well, most people won't follow you. And fish for some wild fish. Have a fry out on the lake or something along those lines. I mean, that's where I'd almost never go if it was just drive down the road to the local lake that's stocked. I want to have the wilderness experience. I want to get out in the woods. That's what we all love. If you listen to this podcast, certainly that's got to be the case. Yeah. I like getting out somewhere. There's not houses all around me. Mm. I have to hike work to get into a little bit. Yeah, maybe the fishing's not fabulous, but I usually catch something. I very rarely go out in those backcountry spots and not get a fish, or at least someone does. And that's what makes me tick, is the woods experience, the whole package.
And that's a good point. So it's... Of course, it's about the fishing too, but it's about the whole experience, and which is why it's on a Bushcraft podcast here, which some people may be wondering, because it's all under the same umbrella.
Yes.
If it gets you out in the woods, that's the key. Whatever makes you tick, right?
Yeah, if it gets you out in the woods, that's bushcrafting.
Exactly, and I mean...
Some people like going just for a snowshoe. I'm about as likely to go for a 5-kilometer snowshoe hike as you know, going for a dip in the ocean in the middle of winter. If I have a purpose, if I'm setting some snares or, you know, going fishing or going camping, then I'm in. But I'm not someone, it's the same as the wife will walk around the block every night. Well, that just doesn't do it for me. I'll go down to the shore and walk the Minas Basin a little bit or something like that and have a look for stuff on the shoreline and that. But I need a purpose or I'm not motivated to do it. So.
And that's fair. Knowing what motivates yourself is also a key thing. So like you said, going to the basin or walking into a fishing spot, as long as you know what your motivation is, it can give you a reason to get out and do this stuff. But that's pretty much all the questions I had for you, Gary. I actually made a list because I had some serious questions on ice fishing. What about you, Ben? Do you have anything that you'd like to add to the end of this?
No, I think I've learned quite a bit. And I mean, I've been out a few times. I've enjoyed it, but I don't think there's any end to this learning and it just keep it up. I'm going to, definitely want to experiment with a few more things.
And, Ben, you went out with one of the best known fishermen in Nova Scotia and didn't catch a fish. So, you really got to pick up your game.
And then you went out with one of the worst fishermen in Nova Scotia.
After I left, but while I was there, I killed him.
But nope.
Yeah. I can reach out to him again and probably get out again next year or this year if I want. So
pretty sure he's already been catching some in that particular lake. So
yeah. He posted a few things in the last little while, so I haven't seen him in a few days. So. But, thanks for coming out. I'm hoping that I'll get to see that canoe soon. Maybe we'll get a trip out with that. So.
Yeah, it's supposed to be here at the latest May, but I'm really pulling for April. So.
Well, once you do get it, be sure to take some pictures and throw up on our Facebook page and your own YouTube channel there. I'd love to see it and check it out.
I'm hoping to get some of Ben's expertise because I need to weigh an easy way of portaging it. It doesn't come with a built-in yoke, so we have to jiggy something up.
And I bet Ben's already got ideas.
We got you, buddy. We'll figure this out.
Let's
wrap this up. I'll let you finish it. I said, let's just wrap this up.
All right. All I was going to say is the same thing. I think we're coming up on our hour. We're starting to digress a little bit, which is all good and dandy. But for anybody that's out here for the actual ice fishing part of this podcast, I think this is a good place to wrap it up. We'd like to thank Gary for coming out, chatting with us again. To check out his Facebook, he mentioned it in the podcast there. It's NS Yak Fisherman.
Yak Fisher.
Regardless, I'm going to put the link to your YouTube channel down in the description of this video. Yeah.
And if anyone is interested, I mean, certainly check out Hook and Paddle TV. It was on Sportsman Canada, but it was just picked up by the World Fishing Network. I think that's on. It has 3 or 4 airing times every Friday. So if you want to see a little bit of paddling and fishing, I'd encourage people to give that a shout.
So is that hookandpaddle.ca?
Hook and Paddle TV. It's an actual TV show. So it's on the
World Fishing just happened Network. To find a website. It said it was Canada's
the
largest.
Hook and Paddle. The Hook and Paddle site would probably be the series itself.
Okay.
Hook and Paddle TV is a media. It was made by a media company and started making a story from it also.
Gotcha.
See a little bit of me, not a whole lot, but certainly worth the look.
All right. If I can find some links to some of that stuff, I'll throw it in the description as well. I see the Hook and Paddle TV has a YouTube channel, Facebook page, and some other stuff there. So maybe I'll tag some of that stuff in there for them as well.
That would be awesome.
You want to take us out, Ben?
What?
You just look too comfortable.
Thanks, everyone, for coming out and listening to us. Like always, get out there, enjoy yourselves. If you can, let us know about your trip. Share anything you're willing to share. We'd very much like to thank Gary for joining us. He's joined us a few times, and we've always enjoyed it. Good night, and see you guys next week.
Night, everybody.
Take care, all. Thanks for having me.